Hi. So, in research, it is actually common, right, that a paper builds on previous work. So, this can be done with numbers from tables or getting model parameters or reference data set. Despite now all the open source initiatives and open access nowadays, reuse is still hard and requires, but it's required to have the results such that they can be made reproducible. So what often happens in practice is that we still have to extract values from tables or get the data from the figures, especially in the modeling fields, to then implement or re-implement analysis because they're not there or only half shared. So it's not because the other researchers don't want to do that, but it's because the original research is not shared in a reusable form. And even when the data and the code are shared, reproducing the results requires to reconstruct the environment that the original authors had at the time. So the problem we face isn't that we don't share. The problem is that we publish research as static artifacts. So thank you very much for the organizer, the great organization, and the opportunity to present. My name is Andreas. And I want to talk in the next few minutes about how we can turn research outputs into executable and reusable project using open source infrastructure and RRP as one concrete example. So to start, where we are today compared to 10, 20 years ago, where most of the information was contained in an article. It has changed a lot with open data becoming widespread, and thanks to repositories such as Zenodo or Figshare, the data is accessible, but also because of funder requirements and new policies. The same is true for code. Sharing code on platforms like GitLab is now common practice in many fields. And yet, when people actually try to run published analysis, results still don't reproduce. So this is not a story about no data or no code. It's about the fact that data and code is not accessible. And even if it's accessible, it's not enough to reproduce and reuse the research. So let's see why this still happens and where it breaks down. But first, maybe to bring everyone on the same page, there is repeatability. And this means that the original researcher can rerun the analysis and generate the same results repeatedly using some data and some code, often locally. Next, we have the reproducibility, which is often used synonymously with computational reproducibility when we are talking about some analysis workflows and pipelines. Here, for example, researcher A shares data and code with researcher B. And then in researcher B's environment, we try to reproduce the same results. Then there's the replication or reuse. So here we share some code with researcher B, and researcher B tries then to extend it with new data. So we say a result is generalizable if this is possible with new data. And this last step is actually what researchers actually want. But this takes a lot of time and effort to achieve. So still, today, researchers aim to publish fair. The concept is around since 10 years now, and the data should be findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable. So what happened is that we have now the policy expectation that if we publish a manuscript with the data and ideally code to a data repository, science magically becomes reproducibly. It's true that such data is then findable and accessible, but not by default interoperable if, for example, proprietary file formats were used at the time, and reusable only in the sense that we have now access to it and someone can use it. But the researcher experience is still that methods description, for example, are scattered between the manuscript supporting information, and the DOI to a data repository just leads to one folder with a bunch of files, which is also true for code, but there at least we have a history how the stuff evolved. But then the questions immediately for a researcher arise, like, how do I rerun this? What environment is needed and to reproduce it? So we're missing the context and the executability. But research artifacts, they don't just exist, they evolve. Guided by a research question, they evolve in different cycles. So data follows one cycle, for example, from planning, acquisition, over processing, to at one point archiving. On the other side, we have code that follows a different life cycle from development, testing, publication, and also maintenance. But these two life cycles are managed by different tools, different systems, and often different people, such as collaborators or maintainers of third-party libraries. So what we are missing is a mechanism that binds a specific version of the data with a specific version of the code under a specific execution environment in the current research system. So now, even if both are open, they don't form this unit. This may now sound like a publication problem, but it's not, because it fails much earlier, inside the lab. Many of you may have seen such messy folder like this semester project, where data, code, lab notes, and different versions of a report are just dumped into one folder with no clear apparent structure. But this is not necessarily a bad practice. This happens if the tools don't capture the context. Similarly, in larger research projects, for example, this lab, it tries to study how protein X regulates the cell cycle. So now the whole team works with, on the same project with exactly the same data, same tools. But here we have, for example, a student working on a Mac laptop, a recent Python version, and creates some results. But then it starts to differ, not because the student made a mistake, but because assumptions about the environment are implicit. So if the student leaves at one point, and let's say a postdoc tries to reproduce the study, but now runs on a Linux system with a slightly older Python version, suddenly the results slightly different. Then, say, a PI tries to help on a Windows system with an even older version and just gets the error. So the question is then, is it now the Python version that causes here the problem, or were pre-processing steps run manually that no one captured? To sort this out on a long term, it's very difficult, time-consuming, and completely inefficient. And these differences, they all happen and slowly accumulate long before the paper is written. And even if you have then the paper, it doesn't fix the problem, it just freezes the problem into a snapshot of the PDF. So we've seen why sharing data, code alone does not automatically give reproducibility, but I also want to stress the point that reproducibility should never be the end goal. It's the minimum requirement, and questions like, can I rerun this, and does do the result match the paper, they should be answered always with a clear yes upon publication. However, a recent study that looked at around 200 random selected papers from the journal Science found that they could only get the data of 44% of it, and then only reproduce the result of roughly one quarter. So this is really sad, it's as it is today, and is extremely far from what researcher and the open research community wants, to reuse the work and ask new questions. So when data and code of the study are reproducible and give the same result, we can then finally work on extension, for example, develop new analysis methods, use such data for benchmarking, for example, of new algorithms, and extend work, bringing in new data, reuse their analysis workflows, and address new questions from a different angle. So with open source code, the environment is assumed to be obvious, but it's not. It's really the key missing dependency. From this execution stack, we see that code runs on some infrastructure, server, laptop, that then runs some operating system that comes with some libraries, And then on top, you have your packages or code that you write for your research to process some data. Traditionally, this stack is implicit. It lives in people's laptop and disappears after publication. And is rarely versioned and almost never published. What are the other options? So bare metal is not portable, but systems can be virtualized. However, this is also heavy. So then there are containers, and they made the environment portable and executable and have been used in research projects, but are very complex to set up. And finally, Binder used this idea to make repositories executable, but sadly it's stateless. But long-lived research involves a data set and access control and needs to preserve this over a long period of time. So we've seen how Binder can help now to make an environment to take it into account, but we haven't talked about how data is managed. So it lives within a folder, even if it has a DOI, but they don't have identity and don't encode how they were produced. On the other side, we have a research data management system where data sets are treated as first-class objects, and it has persistent identifiers, metadata, explicit provenance, and this turns a collection of data into reusable research objects. So in our work, we use the open source RDMS tool called OpenBIS. It's used in many institutions and scales to terabytes of data and is specifically designed for academic and lab environments. So here we see a laboratory information system where you have some methods and protocols, and then you have a tool section with clear APIs, how to get the data in and how to get it out, publish it to open research repositories. Then here we have the lab notebook section. We see raw data, an example of microscopy data, where we can describe all the details and, more importantly, link to the parents, so like which materials, chemicals and so on have been used, what was the goal, and then link it to analysis. This relationship can be searched, so you see which chemical led to which modification of the biological strain, and then this strain is imaged under a microscope and leads to the data, and then eventually which analysis produces a result. But this system has no execution context. So that's where RRP comes in, and it bridges this data and code lifecycle that we saw earlier to generate an open, shareable unit of research around the question. So we need to have the data by reference, the code in version control, and we need the compute context. The data in our system lives in an RDMS like OpenBIS, and the environment and the code is under version control. So RRP then takes this and builds a project where one then can do the whole management, you can collaborate on it, and you can share this whole environment. So quickly on the system architecture, a user just interfaces through a web browser with it, and the environment is built on a Kubernetes system by taking the repository, building a Docker image, mounting the data directly into it, and then have means to publish it on different repositories. So in practice, how this looks, right, we assume the data to be either registered or generated by the lab automatically in the RDMS system. You just specify which is your database and what data sets to use. Then you specify your environment, so which dependency, which packages. You can already specify what kind of analysis you want to do, but this you can also do later. And then you have an example Git project like this. So the environment lives in a Binder folder, the data set in an RRP folder like the data sets where we keep track of it. And the rest is completely free for you to manage and organize and depending the needs of your fields and projects. Once you reach a milestone, you can take the whole thing, freeze it, and register it to the RDMS system and eventually publish it to an open repository where others can reuse and run it. So here a few user interaction with the GUI. So You can either build it from scratch from the Git or reuse it through OpenBiz Share Identifier. You can define the computational resources you need, memory, RAM, start, stop, delete your project. You can mount new data anytime, and it's immediately available within your project. You can upload intermediate data if necessary, or save the whole thing. And you can share it within your institution or with the world. So you have a container that contains the data, the code, and the environment, and runs anywhere. So here, two case studies. This is from the field of arcology. We first registered the data in the RDMS system, then added the R packages that this study developed as a Git submodule to make it available, adopted the path to an R markdown script, and were able to reduce the results. Here another example in the field of neuroscience. There they had data, they had code in a Git repository, but the data they fetched from databases. So this we could just use, but they, for example, didn't specify the execution context. So we had to find the right Python version and the library. But once we sorted this out, we were basically able to rerun all their analysis script and generate the results. So these are two examples from two different fields where you can now reuse that system, trace everything back, and build on it. Now, RP adapts to the researcher and not the other way around. So this is important because we all know with time we have our favorite tools and we are less open to adopt. So we use the open source JupyterLab interface that has a huge community and supports many languages for analysis. Computational scientists prefer RStudio, but this is also accessible. Engineers like MATLAB, despite its proprietary, but even that runs on the platform. Or if you're coding, you may like Visual Studio Code or similar with a debugger. But then if you really like GUIs and like to click around, you can have a full Linux desktop environment with your LibreOffice or OnlyOffice, and here we see, for example, some data mounted into it. So once we have an RP instance running and the user defined their environments with the data and tools, the user experience for the user is almost like on the laptop. So it can be installed on local infrastructure, such as lab server or institutional infrastructure. Small labs can manage it themselves, but also for the IT department, it's low maintenance and scale the RDMS system to huge data, handle the long-term preservation, enable cheap tape storage, or provide these high-performing computing resources. All this technical complexity is hidden away from the users when interacting with the system and requiring more computational power. Even after the export, it contains everything necessary to run anywhere, and it integrates well with the established tools and services such as LaTeX. So once we have the environment specified, here an example on an institutional server, we can bundle it, and now this is how it would look on a local computer. You see it's a Mac computer, and we get exactly the same visualization, same tools, and the user just needs to run it. Thanks to the rich open source ecosystem in Jupyter, right, we can use it in many disciplines. Here, engineering, 3D design, PCB design for electronics. In our group, we work a lot with large image data sets, terabytes in size. To segment, we can do that, use deep learning for segmenting images. Maybe not everyone is fluent in coding, so we can link it to LLMs, ask for help, for example, Gemini, hey, can you give me an example in Python how to count the cells on my images? And yes, it spits out some code and found the 47th cell on that image. It can even use in molecular biology to make it more reproducible because there still a lot of stuff is done manually. Here we load all the strains, the sequences, and so on from the database, can simulate the processes long before, for example, using automated systems to then construct the strains in silico. And finally, at the end of every research project, there's a report summarizing the work. Here I show you Overleaf, a LaTeX editor, where we can start a project, sync it as a Git submodule into RP, write, for example, an introduction, and sync it back and use synergies with such existing tools, for example, to publish it to a preprint server or to the publisher. So RP not only unifies data code, but it also includes the written documentation, making the publication an integral portable part of it, so it runs everywhere in future. So what's next? We have plans to integrate it with the European Open Science Cloud. We plan to engage with the communities to allow mounting, not downloading, reference data from Zenodo, for example, and use LLM assistance to lower the adoption barrier even more. This work is the result of a close collaboration between a software engineer, domain scientist, and the scientific infrastructure team at ETH, which I want to specifically thank and highlight here, and the early adopters in our team who built now their workflows on this system, and the funders to make it possible to develop this platform as open source infrastructure. So to conclude, RP is one example how this can work, but the broader point is not RP, so research should really be something that we can run, inspect, and extend anytime. So that's how we move away from reproducibility as the exception to reuse as the default. The Cure codes link to the manuscript or the demo if you like to install it locally on your infrastructure or laptop. Thanks for the attention. I'm happy to take questions now. Yes.
My question is about the runtime. Sometimes when I want to reproduce some experiment, in physics sometimes it's the repository is very old, mm-hmm. and some packages don't even exist anymore mm-hmm. To download. Is there a solution for this in RP?
So the question was in physics there are sometimes really old projects with outdated packages. So obviously we cannot, there's no magic, right? If the package is gone, it's gone, right? So, but that's why we kind of emphasize to build something like, or use something like RP, because then it's never gone. Because once you export this bundle, it's all there. So you have the system that kind of recreates a computation environment, and it includes all the libraries, even if they're long gone on the repositories or by the maintainers. But to basically find old ones, it's impossible, right?
So it's when you use RP, it creates a package where all this.
Yes.
So if someone looks at it 15 years later.
Yes.
He can also.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So it bundles the code, the data, the environment, potentially the documentation. So everything that was really related to this research. All the dependency, everything. But there are different export options. You can also decide to share lightweight, right? If you have terabytes of data, then we have a mechanism that you basically only bundle the environment and your analysis code, and the data is then downloaded from Zenodo, for example. Because otherwise these bundles, it's basically a zip file, get very large. But for smaller or mid-sized projects, you can really bundle it. You have one big thingy that you download, you press start, and in the browser, it looks exactly as what I showed. And you can run. It's as someone stopped there. Yes?
I think the code check project out of the UK. I'm from QDelt, and we actually have been running the code check project. And we talked to a reproducibility. We essentially asked research before they go to publication earlier. We talked to somebody else, as a software engineer, and they did the whole process. I'm just wondering, what is your take on that kind of process? It's, of course, more intense manual labor involved. How do you compare that to what you guys have here?
So the question is if I'm aware of code
check.
So no, I'm not. But so then I cannot comment on how it compares. But any initiative, right? I don't tell you now everyone should use RP. But what I'm saying as a field in the open research community, we should move towards tools that kind of enable us like reproducible research. And it's really not just putting the code somewhere, but we have to have the environment, we have to have the data, and we, as we heard before, we need also the packages, because it is common that some lose the maintenance or they just get deleted. So if we want to make and preserve this work of research for far future, we need to bundle it, everything. Here we can do it, maybe with your tool as well, then that would be great. Otherwise, maybe you want to integrate it. Yes.
So does your compiled bundle, does it include sort of the finished Docker file? Because of course the issue is, the finished Docker image.
Yeah.
If I clone a repository and I run Docker build, it's pulling from apps, if you're using apps. So what is in the underlying repositories there is changing, even if it's, I type Python 3.10, 3.10.1, 2, 3, it gets updated if I run on a different date. So are you outputting like the SHA-256 checksum that results when you build the Docker image? Do you have a
So the question was if we have basically the image and if we have some kind of checksum to check if I got it correctly, if everything is still available. So yeah, so basically what we share or publish as OC to OC containers like Docker Hub is the full image. So it has everything. But we can also publish the whole container to Zenodo. It's just a zip file, right? You don't have the checks anymore.
Maybe one last.
Yes, please.
Is this about the evaluation of Renuku, something?
No, it's different. But the question was if this is related to Renku. It's called Renku. It's exactly. So Renku is also an initiative developed by the Swiss Data Science Center. And so this is fully Python-based. And there, I'm also just, a user or know it from this side. But if I understand it correctly, is what you do is you have kind of this system, and you can put into the system, like Git, you can put in files and like everything. And once it's in the system, it's kind of tracked. But I don't think that they have some possibilities to have the whole container, to have like a compute environment really in it. So it's always like on demand, right? So you need to have access to the packages, to the repositories and so on.